The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Best Of.
The Hallucination.
Good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, hitting cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events, and as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Hey, we're bringing on our friend right away, Nicole Matthews, Chief Executive Officer, and we're going to be speaking on the upcoming events, but also the great work that Nicole and Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition does. Thank you so much, Nicole. I know you're busy all the time, and really appreciate you coming on for a quick segment and giving us a quick update. Pini Gigi.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has. I really appreciate you coming on, and let's talk about the event this weekend, and I want to get you on again later on this week so we can amplify this. It's always a beautiful, emotional time on Valentine's Day for a couple reasons, but this is a really good reason.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm really looking forward to our event this year, as I do every year. Our missing and murdered Indigenous relatives, a rally in March on this Saturday at 11 a.m. starting at the Minneapolis American Indian Center, and then the march will begin at noon. I think we're going to have a lot of people there this year, so, and you know, I'm really excited to be in community. We it's been a tough year, and we considered whether or not we should have the event at all, but I'm really glad that we moved forward with it.
Yeah, the Minneapolis American Indian Center is 1530 East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, and I'm really glad that you're having it again too, because it is because of tough times. And to me, I've been to quite a few, well, not quite a few, but some events, and it really fills my soul up to see and be in community. So it's really important that we are doing this again.
I agree. It's, you know, in this difficult time, the community events is kind of what gives me life. And so even though we are there to, you know, talk about and raise awareness about our relatives who are missing or who have been murdered, it also feels good to be in community together. And also to feel like, you know, we have all of us together that are working on this issue.
Definitely. And I just want to, I know you're very busy. You're out of state right now, and I really, really appreciate you coming in, and we're going to do this again this week. Just talk a little bit about the organization that you are chief executive officer on too, so our people know who you are.
Yeah. So I'm with the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition. In March, it'll be 24 years I've been there.
What?
I know. Long time. So we started out as a statewide tribal coalition that's still kind of the heart of who we are in Minnesota, working with our communities and our advocates and people. But we also have a large national training and technical assistance project. So we provide training and support to tribes and tribal organizations across the U.S. that are providing direct services to victims of sexual assault and sex trafficking. Yeah, and as well as missing and murdered Indigenous relatives.
Absolutely. And one of the things, too, if you don't mind, we talk a little bit to our listeners out there about what goes on during the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives March. I know it's pretty emotional, and maybe something for them to wear, too, because I know I'll be wearing red.
Yes, please wear red, whether it's a red hat, a red jacket, a red shirt, you know, whatever it is. I think that's red is our color that we always see a lot of. There's also some art events on Friday that I want to highlight. So Friday, February 13th, we are hosting an art event at the Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center on 2300 15th Avenue South from 2 to 7 p.m., where we'll have sign making. We also have some coloring books that were designed by Native artists that we'll have there. We have some for kids and some for adults. Also from noon to 6 p.m., the Minneapolis Indian Ed office is hosting an art event at the Davis Center, 1250 West Broadway. And they will be doing screen printing with Courtney Cochran, which we always do prior to the event. And so bring a t-shirt if you want to have screen printing done, bring a t-shirt. If you are a student of Minneapolis Public Schools, you do not have to bring a t-shirt. They will be providing them for you.
That's awesome. And Nicole, I always want to bring this up too, and we kind of joke about this too. Once you put these on your, like if you have a red hoodie or a red shirt, remember to dry them in the dryer so it soaks in good, right?
Yes, I've learned that the hard way. One time I washed it and then I was like, wait, where's my screen printing? Yes, dry them first and then you can wash them.
Yeah, I know we've joked about that over the years. But again, you know, this March, you know, we have people that come and speak. You MC it. We talk. We have relatives come up that have missing relatives, and it's very emotional. That's one of the heaviest times, but also to have that voice for our community that, you know, MMIR is a real thing. And, you know, these last 10 years of being on the radio, I've really learned so much about it. And because of this march and because of your organization.
Thank you. Yes, we're going to have some great speakers. We'll have some family members who are going to come and talk about their relatives who are still missing. And then we will also have, you know, some community speakers, some legislative speakers. I know our Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan will be there and will be speaking. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be a great event. It always is. It is a heavy event. So, so come prepared and, you know, but it'll be good to be together.
Well, one of my favorite speakers yearly is a group of people from Chicago that come in and support. Can you talk a little bit about them? Because this is for everybody that supports what your organization's doing, but what supports our community.
Yeah, so we have partnered with an organization called A Long Walk Home for many years. And they work on addressing sexual violence in Chicago, and they work with Black women and girls, and they started coming to our marches and they started doing raising awareness about missing and murdered Black women and girls in Chicago. And so they have come in years past, they have brought like 10, 15 people, and they bring their young people who have come and done spoken word and you know, poetry, and it's really beautiful to also have you know, be in solidarity with all of our relatives and with other mm-hmm. communities, and to see people stepping up and supporting each other. Because I think, especially in these times, it's really important that we show up for each other. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're certainly seeing in Minnesota, our neighbors, our community members really stepping up for each other. And I hope people keep that momentum for our missing and murdered Indigenous relatives all the time, not just this year.
Exactly. And this is Nicole Matthews, a CEO of Chief Executive Officer of Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition. And we'll see everyone February 14th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Minneapolis American Indian Center. Nicole, I'll see you later on this week. Pini Gigi for coming on, and a great update. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Take care.
We'll see you soon. We'll be right back with Dr. Stately. Ho-wa.
To our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come, we are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us, thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time, starting in 1492.
To those who have kept their homelands, and to the nations extinct due to mass slaughter, slavery, deportation, and disease unknown to them, and to the ones who are subjected to the same treatment today.
To the ones who survived the relocations and the ones who died along the way.
To those who carried on traditions and lived strong among their people.
To those who left their communities by force or by choice, and through generations no longer know who they are.
To those who search and never find, to those that turn away the so-called non-accepted, to those that bring us together, and to those living outside, keeping touch, the voice for many.
To those that make it back to live and fight the struggles of their people, to those that give up and those who do not care, to those who abuse themselves and others, and those who revive again, to those who are physically, mentally, or spiritually incapable by accident or by birth,
to those who seek strength in our spirituality and ways of life, and those who exploit it, even our own.
To those who fall for the lies and join the dividing lines that keep us fighting amongst each other.
To the outsiders who step in, good or bad, and those of us who don't know better.
To the leaders and prisoners of war, politics, crime, race, and religion, innocent or guilty.
To the young, the old, the living, and the dead,
to our brothers and sisters and all living things across Mother Earth,
and her beauty we've destroyed and denied the honor that the Creator.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. Hey, this episode is presented in partnership with the City of Minneapolis for Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations, who hosts a monthly conversation on the second Wednesday of the month regarding happenings that impact our Native communities in Minneapolis. We are so grateful to have this partnership and keep up to date on topics that can support the largest urban Indian population in the country. And I'm going to pass things over to Minneapolis American Indian Community Specialist and our guest host, Christine McDonald. Welcome. Ho-wa.
Hi, Robert. Thank you so much. I'm happy to be back today. Buju, Ogodaki, Gabuik, Nindijnikaz, Aji, Jack, Nindundem. I'm Christine McDonald. I'm the American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis, and I am your guest host tonight. Today, we begin with Director Rachel Sayer, who is joining us from the City's Emergency Management Department. Welcome, Rachel.
Thanks, Christine. Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy to have you. Can you start out by telling our audience just a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. So my name is Rachel Sayer. I am the director for the City's of Minneapolis Emergency Management Department. The Emergency Management Department is one of five departments in our city under something called the Office of Community Safety. And together we work to keep our community safe. So our role is really all about preparing our community for potential disasters. And then when those disasters hit, it's about managing the response, coordinating the response, supporting recovery efforts, and focusing on how we can reduce future risks to our community from disasters. So I'm from the Twin Cities, and I returned home a few years ago to take this position after serving at the United States Agency for International Development, USAID. I have spent most of my career working on conflict zone crises internationally in places like Yemen, Syria, Iraq, Ukraine, and Haiti. And it's just a complete honor to be home and in my community at this point in time. And right now, what I'm doing is spending all my time running our city's Emergency Operations Center as the director of that entity.
Thank you. So you said you're running the Emergency Operations Center. I've also heard it referred to as an EOC. Can you tell us what that is and what you guys do there?
Yeah. So when there's a large-scale disaster or emergency, the city stands up this thing called an Emergency Operations Center. It's a physical space in a physical room in which all sorts of different departments from the city, and we have state, and we have county partners come and physically sit with us. We together tackle the problems. We together monitor the situation. We together hear from all of our community via different departments, 311, 911, a city council colleagues, what is needed. And then we work on solutions and resources to meet those needs. We also facilitate the city moving from response to recovery once we're able to do so. So in short, you know, the Minneapolis EOC, Emergency Operations Center, we don't replace first responders like police or firefighters, but we work with them and we make sure that the right supports are available to community at the right time.
Can you go a little bit more into who's involved in the EOC?
Yeah. So right now we have had for the last month plus, I think almost every single department as a part of our EOC. That means we have public works, regulatory services, our economic development colleagues, our neighborhood and community relations colleagues. And we're all together because that helps us solve those problems faster. So we also have our county and state emergency management colleagues in the room so that we can, again, solve problems faster. We also work very closely with our communications colleagues who run something called a joint information center. Mm-hmm. And together we solve how to get resources out to community members. Right now you can find those resources on our minneapolismn.gov/federal website.
And how is the city responding to the federal occupation of Minneapolis right now?
Yeah. So we're tracking impacts and coordinating the city's response in our emergency management, in our emergency operations center. And obviously we all know and feel every day here, this federal occupation is having profound repercussions on our community, mm-hmm. and disproportionately on our immigrant and refugee communities, disproportionately on our communities of color, including of course our Native American neighbors. So what we're doing is keeping the city operational, and we're hearing all of the impacts on basic necessities like getting food, housing, going to school, getting to work, and working with the different resources we have available to making sure everyone knows what those resources are and how they can access them.
Mm-hmm. And again, the place to access those resources is at
MinneapolisMN.gov/federal. Absolutely.
Thank you. And then how does the city's EOC differ from the state level Emergency Operations Center?
Yeah. So like I said, we have someone from the state's emergency management in our city Emergency Operations Center. The difference is the city Emergency Operations Center focuses on the city, right? We're very tightly focused on our communities, our impacts, our city departments that we coordinate with. the state emergency operations center is looking at the entire state, mm-hmm. right? So they're pulling information from individual city or county emergency operations center and rolling that up into state considerations and situation monitorings. So we're really involved at very different scales and different levels of detail. You know, the cities, we're there first, we're here always. So we're focused on our community.
Do you know if other cities have emergency operation centers that they lift up, or is it because of the size of our city that we have one?
Yeah, several other cities have stood up their emergency operation centers during this period. I'm not sure which ones are still operating right now. But that's something that exactly the state operations mm-hmm. center has a good sense of. They know which ones are operating when, and we coordinate most closely with St. Paul, of course, and other ones around our most immediate vicinity.
Can you say more about how the EOCs interact with each other?
Yeah. So we share information every day, all the time. So mm-hmm. if in the city we need something that we don't have, we say, hey, Hennepin County, do you have that resource? Maybe that's a service like providing mental health with Hennepin COPE, which provides free mm-hmm. mental health services to everyone. And again, you can find on the minneapolismn.gov/federal. But we call the Hennepin County first. If Hennepin County doesn't have it, we call the state and say, hey, do you have this resource? So we're constantly communicating and asking for help when we need it.
Mm-hmm. Is there, I mean, what goes into deciding when an EOC is enacted at the city level and then whether a state, do they depend on each other? Can one be enacted without the other?
Yes, they definitely can. So here in the city, we've had a few different EOCs operated over the last year since I've been here. So we had one when there was really severe storm potential for the city. We operated an emergency operations center. We also had one running during the tragedy that occurred at Annunciation Church last fall. And then, of course, we've had this one running for over a month now.
Yeah. Thank you. And one more, we got just a couple of seconds. Can you go into a little bit of what those resources are that they can find on the website?
Absolutely. So on our website, you can find things like access to free mental health services. You can find information about where to donate. You can find information about what's happening. That's where we're posting all of the, you know, information about the current situation. You can find resources to know your rights, really mm-hmm. critical information. You can find free legal resources. You can find information about if there's been a vehicle abandoned due to an ICE detention. You can find out how we've worked to get that vehicle back available to you for free. There's lots of business help, small business information. So there's all sorts of information there.
Thank you.
Hey, we'll be right back. You're listening to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio.
Support for KFAI comes from the Cedar Culture Center, presenting Arkansas and the Chicken Wire Empire Sunday, February 15th. Progressive Newgrass Quartet, Arkansas Channel's Ozark Mountain Melodies, has a tour with their latest release, OK to Wonder. Wisconsin-based Chicken Wire Empire brings their two light songs to their latest release, Growing Pains. More information about Arkansas and Chicken Wire Empire is available at thecedar.org.
When you're ready to let go of that car you no longer need, KFAI is ready for you. Our vehicle donation program is available 7 days a week to help you arrange for your free pickup. It's easy, it's free, and it matters. Donate at kfai.careasy.org or call 855-277-2346.
Hey, this episode is supported by the City of Minneapolis, Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations, and here's our host, Christine McDonald. Hoo-wa.
Welcome back. I'm Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis, and your guest tonight for Minneapolis Air. Joining us for the rest of our conversation for this segment is Rachel Sayer, who is the Director of the City's Emergency Management Department. We've been talking about the city's emergency operations center that is stood up during times of crisis in our city. Rachel, can you tell us how does the EOC engage with the community and different community needs?
Yeah, so this is the heart of what we do. We need to hear from our community so that we know where to focus our efforts. So you can think of us in the EOC, the Emergency Operations Center, like a central hub. So every piece of information that comes to us, no matter where it's from, we're looking at figuring out what's urgent that we can connect resources to. We're looking at what needs to, you know, happen now and what needs to happen in a few weeks. So we really, really want to hear from our whole community in Minneapolis of what's needed and what's happening. So there's lots of ways that people can connect in by sharing information. One of those is, you know, city staff. So it's not just the first responders that you see. It's our public works colleagues. It's our health department colleagues. Anyone who you see out in community, please share, if you want to, what you're experiencing or your needs. And that comes to us here in the Emergency Operations Center, and it helps us then directly translate that into the resources that we're offering. So our neighborhood and community relations specialist, Christine, is a wonderful colleague example, of course, yourself. City council members, you know, they're out in the wards. They're then sharing that information with us. 311, 911, every single one of these come back into us in the EOC. And we use that information to help us figure out what's needed next.
Mm-hmm. I think the other part of that is the flip. You know, just like you guys have that resource website right now, and then we're able to get information out to community that's needed. You know, some of the things, especially that we're seeing right now, assistance for small businesses, assistance for utilities, rent relief, donation sites, rent relief access. So yeah, thank you for that. And I see the benefit of that information coming out daily. So we do work together often, and I appreciate that. Do you have any advice for the families now and about how to prepare for emergencies?
Yeah. So first of all, have a plan. That's the number one thing that you should do with your house, with your family, is talk about what is your emergency plan. And you don't have to build it all at once because it can be quite intimidating. But just, you know, the very first part is, do you know each other's phone numbers if you lost power on your cell phone, right? Do you know where you'd meet if something happened? You know, have that discussion before you get to the emergency is going to put you in such a better place than when the bad thing happens. Mm-hmm. We actually run a program called Ready Camp. We have a few sessions coming up in the next few months in which we teach community members. It's open. It's free to anyone to join. It's at multiple locations around the city, but we talk through building an emergency kit. What should you have in your home emergency kit for if there's a large-scale emergency or disaster? We talk through developing a family communication plan, right? And that involves those things. What are your phone numbers? Where are we going to meet? Mm-hmm. We talk about here in Minneapolis, we have severe weather sirens. So we talk through what are you supposed to do when you hear those sirens? Because it's not just tornadoes, actually, that they sound for. Then we talk too about, like, what do you need to do to help your family best be ready to recover from a disaster? Because, you know, large-scale disasters have real long-term impacts. Mm-hmm. And then we talk a little bit about homeowners and renters insurance as well, which is a really key component to help your household, your family prepare for disaster.
Thank you. So I have been through that Ready Camp training in the past. And even just now during this federal occupation, there have been times when I've recommended to folks, you know, make sure you have a communication plan. There were different events that were happening across the city or within our city where we weren't aware or we weren't sure how it was going to go. You know, there was potential for some real crises and emergencies to happen, public safety risks, and just being able to rely on the things that I was taught in that training and advising people, do you have a communication plan? Even if your kids are teenagers and they don't want you to track their location, maybe just for this day, maybe for this time in this moment. And then, yeah, the whole telephone number thing, everybody keeps their numbers in their phones. And if, what if your phone gets lost or taken or stolen? And what are you going to do? You know, if you are in this part of the city where there's potential emergency or conflict going to happen, what is your plan? You know, and if you guys are going to work, how are you going to meet up? It really is a great training for people to go to. I would advise people to look on the website. And is it on just anywhere? You can go to the city's website and look up Ready Camp Training.
Yep, that's right. You can search the website for Ready Camp Training or go to our city's Emergency Management Department website. We have information there. Mm-hmm. And Christine, I love hearing that it was useful for you, this training, mm-hmm. because, you know, one of the things that I've been, as we've gone through this occupation and, you know, families have been torn apart, one of the things that we really talk about in preparedness is, you know, have those locations, not just your home, where you know you can meet up, right? So if it's not safe to go home because something's happening, know where that location is in advance and then practice it. Mm-hmm. Because what happens during an emergency is, you know, our brains really change in that moment. And it's really hard to recall information that you've only ever talked about once. Mm-hmm. Like ideally you're practicing it and having those conversations on a regular basis. So it just like sticks in your memory better when you're at that heightened, now I'm actually in an emergency mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think some people have been around, we've gotten to see a few different times where we needed to lean into like emergency response. One was the tornado. Another was when the bridge collapsed, and then Annunciation and just different times and being prepared. The other thing that I kept thinking about was, how do you communicate with each other? If everybody's trying to get a hold of each other and there's an emergency, those lines are going to be tied up.
That's right.
So yeah. Are you going to have one family person be the spokesperson that they can connect with people outside of the city if you need to?
That's right.
We were even having discussions about, you know, who's going to go pick up this elder family member, you know, and help them get out, you know, even during the riots, it's like, okay, my grandparents wanted to stay in the house. And so people are we coming in? Who's going to come in and check on them? Thankfully, they had some really great neighbors that were there for them and checked on them and helped make sure that they stayed safe. Yeah. So just that emergency planning, just in your family and then with reliable neighbors.
Yeah. And Christine, you just exactly, it just as an emergency manager, it warms my heart to hear you talk through. You kind of make up bad scenarios and then walk mm-hmm. through them as a family. That's really mm-hmm. at the heart of emergency management is it's better to think about it when you're not in that moment, as scary as it can be mm-hmm. beforehand, because it's going to better prepare you for when something does go wrong. Exactly. So talking through exactly, yeah, who's taking care of our neighbor, who's taking care of this yep. family member, and just kind of practice it and try to poke holes in your plan. That's going to put you in such a better place for when the mm-hmm. bad thing happens.
And like texting family members, not to fear monger, but just yes. situational awareness. This is what's happening on this date. You know, do we have a plan? You know, what are we going to do? And even like some of my family members have gone as far as creating bug out bags.
Yep.
Yep. What absolutely. Do you have on hand? What do you need to grab?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's just... That's a great practice. You need to have your go kit. You should have your mm-hmm. in-house kit. If you can't leave your house, you need your go kit. Yeah. That often includes, you know, copies of important documents.
Yes.
And you really should have a car kit too, you know, especially here in the winter, yeah. right? If you're stuck mm-hmm. in a snowstorm, you need to have those emergency supplies to get through 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. Pencils, not pens, because pens freeze. Paper, yep. Blankets.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is there anything else that you'd like our audience to know?
Yeah, I think I just want to, I'm so proud to be from this area and I'm so proud of our community, how we've come together to support each other in this really impossible moment, everyone is showing up and taking care of each other. And it's just, it's incredible to be a part of this and be a part of this community. So, you know, keep checking out our website, MinneapolisMN.gov/federal for information and resources, and just keep taking care of each other. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us tonight, Rachel.
Thanks.
Hey, we'll be right back. You're listening to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio. Hoo-wah. Back to Native Roots Radio Presents, I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, this episode is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations. And here's our guest host, Christine McDonald. Ho-wa!
Thank you. Welcome back. I'm Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis, and I'm your guest host tonight for Minneapolis Air. And for this segment, we welcome Tammy Dickinson and Mark Brinda from Minneapolis Employment and Training. And they're going to talk with us about resources available to job seekers of all ages and our employers here in Minneapolis. And I want to start with thanking you for joining us today. And then I ask that you each introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you and what you do for the city. Can you start with Mark?
Great. Hi, Christine. Nice to see you. Good evening, everyone. Mark Brinda, I'm lucky enough to manage workforce development for the City of Minneapolis. So all programs that we have on offer, we design and deliver to community. And hand it over to Tammy.
Hi, Christine. Really great to be here. And I'm Tammy Dickinson. I am the Step Up Director for the City of Minneapolis, working at Minneapolis Employment and Training.
Thank you. And so, Mark, can you explain what the City of Minneapolis Employment and Training does?
Absolutely. So the City of Minneapolis Employment and Training is the city's workforce development arm of economic development. So what we do is we help folks that are looking for work, looking for training, getting re-engaged, anybody from 14 years old all the way to the point where you're saying, I'm done with work. And so programs are designed to meet people where they're at in terms of what kind of job they're looking for, what industry they have experience in, where they want to go with their career. And we do this all through community-based partners. And so we are not delivering that. We do that through these great nonprofits that we have out in community. And we've been doing that model for about 40 plus years. And so it's a real proven model for Minneapolis.
Wow, 40 years, that's amazing. And what kind of resources do you have for people that are looking for jobs?
So in terms of resources, we put all those resources that we do receive from the federal government, the state government, and local dollars, we put into the hands of our community partners to do things like youth programs, which Tammy will talk about, which engage 14 to 21-year-olds in work, sometimes their first, second, third job, and into that training. We have projects for older youth who are looking to get reconnected, maybe finish high school, maybe get their first access to training. Then we have anything for adults that include career training, can be stipend when you're in training, can be a direct job placement, meaning I'm looking for work today and want to be working tomorrow or the next day. And then anything in between. I've been laid off. I'm looking for to re-engage. We have programs for that too. So really wide variety of stuff. And a lot of it is really driven by the strength of our community partners who all have different models that they want to be using and ways of engaging. And so no one agency operates the same way. And so what we always try to make sure that everybody knows is that you can connect through so many of these resources to find what you're looking for.
How do they find the resources?
Much of it is word of mouth. I can't lie. I mean, we do flyers, we'll do ads, we'll do publicity, our nonprofit partners will advertise, but so much is done through community word of mouth. Mm-hmm. I worked with so-and-so, or I was in this training program in healthcare and I had success. And so they pass it along, but people can always find resources and know where to connect on our website at the city of Minneapolis, minneapolismn.gov, and look for employment and training. You can always find those resources and then those connective points into community.
Is there a list there then that would help them identify?
Yep.
Okay. So yep. They can
and
choose
we have QR like, codes. Yeah, and you can identify what kind of job seeker you are. I'm a youth looking for a job, and how do I connect? Or I've been recently laid off. What do I do next? And we can connect those resources as best we can, and through referrals and through connections.
You mentioned youth. You have specific resources for youth?
We do. We have primarily two big programs, and those exist in the space of Step Up, which is our summer youth work program. You'll hear a lot about that momentarily, but that's our really big push to engage as many young people in Minneapolis into work as possible and get that summer work experience. But we also operate a really, what I think is comprehensive youth and older youth program, what we call Minneapolis, or it is a federally funded program. And these, we have about six partners that do it. American Indian OIC, speaking on Native Roots Radio, is one of those core partners, been doing it for a very long time, have lots of expertise in that. And that really is a broad year-round program that can help you stabilize with school, get yourself ready for work, get an internship, maybe get first work experience, earn a stipend, re-engage with school, have tuition assistance, and have that wraparound support for that full year or however long it takes you in that program. And then we have some programs that are sort of one-offs, in, so to speak, which help engage specific people. So one called Journey Forward, which is helping previously gang-affiliated or clique-affiliated young people to get stabilized and find that transition point. And so we oftentimes will run these small pilot programs or short-term programs when we have funding that allows for it. So we do, we love making those investments in young young people, because they're such a great on-ramp to future work success and earning more wages and bringing home that wage stabilization that they need.
So you did say the Journey Forward, and I noticed that it's 16 to 28 years old.
Yep.
And then I think there's another one, Minneapolis Works. That one starts at 14. I think, I always thought like you had to be 16 to start.
Well, as Tammy knows better than I do, there are work opportunities for 14, 15 year olds. Oftentimes they do have a little bit of greater limitations on what and how many hours you can work, but we absolutely want to engage 14, 15 year olds wanting to get into that. For the 16 to 28 year olds, those are for folks that, you know, maybe have fallen out of high school and want to reengage, or have come out of incarceration and really need to know what their next turn is. And then similarly, in our WIOA youth programs operated by six partners across Minneapolis, similar services would be offered in terms of supports and wraparounds and that career navigation.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And then you did mention Step Up. And so I think we'll ask Tammy, what is the Step Up program?
That is a great question. So Step Up is the City of Minneapolis's summer youth program. It's an internship program for youth who live in Minneapolis who are ages 14 to 21. And as you know, Mark alluded to, and as you asked, it's like, can you work at 14? Yeah. So child labor laws, yes, absolutely. And one of the reasons we call it Step Up is we want to get our young people in Minneapolis who are 14 and 15 engaged in the workforce early. So they have a step up or a leg up on some of their peers, because we're working with the youth that might have the least connection to work. And we want to get them into the workforce.
And so I can tell a little bit more about what it is. This program's been around since 2003, and we've served more than 34,000 young people in internships and connected them with work experiences. We partner with Achieve Twin Cities, and we partner with Project for Pride and Living to operate. Much like Mark mentioned, we have contracted providers that do the work in community, and the city is the, you know, the backbone and the infrastructure for the program. So, nuts and bolts, our job is to connect young people who want to work with internship experiences with employers in our community. And so every year we have about 3,000 applicants that want to participate. And our limiting factor is typically the number of jobs we can recruit from our employment community or employer community. Wow. So since COVID, we've typically had about 1,000 young people that we have working internships around the city. And we work with about 100 employers with that. Let's see, just want to make sure that I'm covering all the bases here. Oh, right. So some young people apply and they do all the things they need to do to get to be eligible for an internship experience, but we are not able to match them with a position. So what we do is we still have an opportunity for them, and they can do an online paid experience where they can build their skills, do some financial education, and explore other careers online. So they can still earn money and still build their skills.
So what makes them internship eligible?
Great question. We've really tried to remove barriers in young people getting into the internship opportunity. So they need to apply. They need to meet the eligibility criteria of living in the city of Minneapolis, mean the age eligible. But then they need to attend an orientation. So previously they would have to do some online work readiness training in the spring, and we've removed that barrier just because we found that it was a barrier. So instead they come to an in-person orientation, they learn what they need to know to be ready for their internship experience, and then we start matching them with the jobs. So a very low barrier. Although I will say we have redesigned our programming, so we now offer some more advanced internship opportunities with our premier employers, and that is for youth who are 16 to 21. Mm-hmm. They apply like everybody else to Step Up, but there's an additional application for youth who do want to do the advanced opportunity. So it's not a requirement. If you're 16 to 21 and you're like, I want to work with our nonprofit community, that's all good. You do. You just do the orientation and we work with you. But if you're 16 to 21 and you're like, I'm ready for project-based work with maybe an architectural firm or in the finance world or an advanced healthcare job, then you submit a resume, you answer some long answer questions, and then you bring some work experience to the table to show that you're ready for that experience.
So they really could potentially get a wide range of experience in different fields.
Absolutely. We have jobs for our youngest youth, largely in the nonprofit sector, and working maybe in schools, or think Cookie Cart or Boys and Girls Clubs, YMCA. Those are where our youngest or more entry-level youth are working. And then for our what we call Step Up Pro youth, they might be working with US Bank or Target or Medtronic.
Thank you.
Hey, we'll be right back. You're listening to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio.
Programming on KFAI is supported by Quit Partner. Quitting smoking or vaping is easier said than done. Quit Partner offers Minnesotans no-cost resources to quit nicotine, including patches, gum and lozenges, coaching, and digital support. More at quitpartnermn.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, this episode is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations. And here again is our guest host, Christine McDonald. Ho-wah.
Thank you. Welcome back. I'm Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And we are returning to our conversation with Tammy Dickinson and Mark Brenda, who are from the Minneapolis Employment and Training Department, to talk about different resources that we have available for job seekers of all ages here in the city. Before we went on break, we were talking about the Step Up program that we have at the City of Minneapolis. And Tammy, can you get a little bit into why someone should join Step Up?
Absolutely. So Step Up is a way for young people to get into jobs that they typically wouldn't as a teenager. So that's what Step Up brings as a value to our community, is that we definitely don't want to get in the way of our regular teen jobs like restaurants, retail, grocery stores. We want those jobs to be going to teens for sure. But what Step Up does is offer opportunities for young people to get into businesses that they wouldn't otherwise. So as a high schooler, you typically aren't going to be able to go into US Bank corporate and work next to professionals doing finance work, or you're not going to get into an architecture firm or a legal firm. So we bring young people into those places and spaces so that they get to network with professionals that they typically wouldn't get to know, maybe in their community or maybe in just their schoolwork, right? And that happens at both the older ages when they're working at what we, you know, the fancy firms, right? Maybe mm-hmm. they're working at Medtronic or General Mills or whatever. But it also happens at the community level, where we offer an opportunity for young people to go into those community organizations and learn how they're engaging and how to build community and what those leaders are doing and thinking about when they're developing their programs for young people or for families and beyond.
That's beautiful. And what kind of jobs can you expect to be connected to?
Yeah, our youngest interns or entry-level interns typically are working in jobs like arts or communications. They might be working, I'll just give some examples. They might work at Project for Pride and Living and do some administrative or clerical work. They might work at Cookie Cart and, you know, help with the cookie production or taking cookie orders, but it's not just about making cookies, right? It's about learning how orders are placed and how to reach out to community to market. We have a fantastic partner on the north side, Urban Strategies, who has Green Garden Bakery that makes vegetarian and vegan foods. And our young people learn both how to grow the foods in the garden, harvest those foods, and then make them into delicious treats that they then go sell at farmers markets. So they get to see the business from the ground through the sale. So that's for our youngest people. There are also childcare positions. A lot of young people have a comfort in working with children because they've worked with their brothers and sisters or siblings and, you know, taking care of them. But lots of art positions, a lot of outdoor positions. So if you're not wanting to sit at a desk, you can be in the environment working outdoors. So you might be an education assistant in schools. And then for our older interns, like I've mentioned, it's a lot more the advanced interns are doing project-based work. Some of them work at the City of Minneapolis in planning or the health department. Some work at Hennepin County in the cultural department, or some work at the state of Minnesota. Others are at private firms, like I mentioned, General Mills, and really getting into those career fields and understanding what it means to work as a professional in those businesses.
Mm-hmm. That's really amazing. So I remember I was in the city's human resources department when I first learned about mm-hmm. Step Up, and I thought it was just like a City of Minneapolis, like as the enterprise right. thing. And so to learn that Step Up interns have these opportunities all across the city in different organizations, different companies, that's really a great opportunity. And it's amazing. And so then talking about all these great places that kids can go to work at, how do students apply for Step Up, and when do the 2026 internships start?
Yeah. So our application is open now. It opened on January 5th and it will close on March 1st, which is actually really tough for community, right? Because young people are not thinking about summer jobs in February. So we do a ton of recruitment. We're in schools, we do social media. We're really trying to get the word out so that young people don't miss their opportunity to apply. So if you can get the word out in, you know, community, and of course, this is a whole market to do that. And then our internship. So the reason we have an early application process is because we do need to do those orientation sessions and the onboarding sessions once we match our interns. So that happens in April and May after the orientations. And then June 22nd is when most of our internships start, and they usually run about 9 weeks. So we're done at the end of August, just before kids get to go back to school.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I got a question. Is it, do you see students return? Like, is there a high number? Is it like they try it out and maybe they find something else on their own?
Yeah, year over year, we have about 30% returners. And so anecdotally, right, we see it as a success if a young person engages once and they're like, that was great. I figured out what I do or don't want to do. And now I can take this and I can find my own job. Mm-hmm. That is a total success, right? We don't need to pull kids back year after year, but there are young people that will come in and they'll try one opportunity and then come back another year and build on that. And then ideally, if they come back again, they would then go into the pro program. So they'd be ready for the advanced internships and working in the private sector. But there are others who like start at Urban Strategies when they're 14 and they're like, I love this and I want to learn more about this and go deeper. And they can. Mm-hmm. They can stay with that organization and continue to build their skills and maintain those relationships.
Mm-hmm. And so what are the next steps in the process? After a student is accepted into Step Up, what happens?
Yeah, we notify young people within 2 weeks of when they apply. And let them know, okay, now you need to sign up for an orientation. And those orientations start in March, and we have probably 8 to 12 that will happen. And we invite advocates, parents, whomever wants to come with their young person to those orientations so that everybody knows what's going on. And then after they attend orientation, we start doing the job matching with the jobs we've recruited. And we'll then do the onboarding sessions where, you know, that's where you bring your paperwork, you fill out all your forms. As an HR person, you know, you do all the things you need to do to get hired and get paid. And then internships start June 22nd.
So then is it a paid orientation?
The orientations themselves are not paid. It's 45 minutes long in community. Oh, okay. So
that's a quick one. I think that's reasonable for you. Let's see, we're getting one question I really wanted to get to is the flip side of that. And what about employers? How do they get involved?
Yes, thank you. That is the limiting factor, as I've mentioned. Employers can reach out, they can go to stepupmpls.org and find out how to engage. We need lots of jobs. We want to get 1,500 young people employed this summer if we can. And so just go there, reach out. We can tell you the next steps. We'll schedule a phone conversation and talk to you about what it means to have an intern at your company or at your nonprofit.
Yeah. I'm going to ask my boss if I can get a Step Up.
Yes. I love
Absolutely.
That.
Do it.
Yep. I look forward to it.
Well,
wow. Thank you for great information.
This has just been unbelievable, Christine. Great show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us tonight.
Good night.
Well, you all been listening to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio. We'll be back tomorrow. Hey, thanks again. Great show, you guys.
Industrial Reservation. We are the Halusa.
Pini again for listening to Native Roots Radio.
We have been called the Indians. We have been called Native American. We have been called hostile. We have been called pagan. We have been called militant. We have been called many names. We are the Haluza Nation. We are the human beings. The callers of names cannot see us, but we can see them.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at kfai.org, non-commercial, community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
The gin and tonic?
Oh, it's